Friday morning, good morning to you. Crisis, farce, rogues, renegades, they're doing the hokey cokey, the language of our politicians in 2015. Are they capable of carrying out the duties of elected representatives? We're going to be speaking to Eamon Malley, who's been keeping a very close eye on political developments, live in the studio in just a moment. Also, are you going to the rally to welcome the refugees? What does Jermaine Janus have to say about Premiership football? And do you want to be a winner? Opportunities for you on the programme this morning. So just looking at some of the headlines in the main papers, Irish News, Walkout, Belfast Telegraph, Meltdown, and the newsletter, Robinson, We're Out. Well, not quite. Let me speak to Eamon Malley, who's been across all of this for a lifetime, but certainly in the last 24 hours. Eamon, yesterday was incredible. What's the weekend on Monday going to hold?
Who knows? Gerry Adams was asked the other day.
My apologies, Eamon, you're in a closer studio to me than I thought. Go ahead.
Gerry Adams was asked the other day, how long did he think these negotiations would go on? He said, the rest of my life. Well, in many ways, you're asking me, how long will this go on? What's going to go on? This could go on for the rest of my life. That's just the way it is, you know. It's this up and down. Danny Kennedy, branded the DUP style of politics. Peter Robinson stepping aside. Arlene Foster stepping in, the gatekeeper. He branded this morning, hokey-cokey politics. And we're really there. We're into hokey-cokey politics. I'm into it. I've also dubbed this Micawber politics, you know, because essentially we're following the principle of Mr. Micawber now, hoping something turns up. But whether anything turns up. But it's a fascinating situation for analysts like me and yourself, Frank, trying to make some sense out of it. And that's really what we're trying to do here. I was very convinced from the very outset that the Prime Minister and the British government was in no mood to opt for suspension. And that has proven so. Right from the beginning, I don't think that the British government considered that what had happened here was sufficiently grave to justify bringing down or suspending. And the Secretary of State has made it clear. She's very specific. She said, to suspend devolution is a serious matter, is how she described it. And it's interesting the language she used this morning on the radio. She said, Northern Ireland has passed the point where suspension is a regular feature. Now, that's new language, and that's indicative of where this government stands in terms of where we are in Northern Ireland. So the onus is back. I'm surprised we haven't choppers on the lawn, but the choppers are not on the lawn. And I think that's quite significant as well, that David Cameron has stayed in London and that Enda Kenny has stayed in Dublin. This is new politics, new reality in Northern Ireland in terms of how these administrations are dealing with Northern Ireland. But just one little observation, Frank, which really was quite startling, was the presence of Charlie Flanagan, the Irish Foreign Minister, standing at the bottom of the steps beneath Craigavon's gaze in the Great Hall at Parliament Buildings, doing a live interview with the BBC television yesterday evening. It's hard to take that in, what's going on and the way the sands are shifting, and yet nothing's changing. So, you know, it's sort of unreal what we're witnessing here again. But we've been here before.
But we do have to witness reality at some point, and very soon, if we're going to be properly governed. And there's talks on Monday. Will the DUP go into the talks?
Yes. I heard Arlene Foster saying this morning that by stepping aside, Peter Robinson is freed up now to centrally place himself in those talks. My observation of Peter Robinson is that he needs another holiday. But holidays are bad for him. The last thing Peter Robinson should do is to go on holidays. He's had a nightmare. August has proven for Peter Robinson habitually availing of Edna O'Brien's book, August is a Wicked Month. August is a wicked month for Peter Robinson. 2-3 years in a row now, he's had bad experiences flowing from his holidays, coming back to a nightmare. So, yes, he's going to involve himself in the talks. Last night, Mike Nesbitt was rather confusing. He was being asked on television, would he be at the talks? And if the whole question of the IRA, paramilitarism, etc., didn't top the agenda, he said it'll be at the top of my agenda. He was consistently pressed by Gerry Kelly and Mark Ruthers on this issue, and he kept saying it'll be top of my agenda. But it didn't matter what your agenda is. If it's not top of the agenda set by the Secretary of State, will you be at the talks? And he said it'll be top of my agenda. So Professor Rick Wilford described the interview as a car crash. That may be so. The reason I think why the Democratic Unionist Party is reluctant to go to the country and to realise an election now, and this was the ruse used by Mr. Robertson to obviate an election at this point in time by stepping aside, not resigning, and putting Arlene in, was two things are militating against the mindset of the Democratic Unionist Party at the moment in terms of elections. One, they're very aware of the backdrop of any election, the dysfunctional nature of the executive and the assembly. That is very uppermost in their mind. And secondly, they don't know the level of traction which Mike Nesbitt has gained as a result of what is perceived to be his decisive action in pulling his minister out, taking the stance that he took. Now, okay, he had a good advance on this. Regardless, at least this is what the party is boasting, that they knew well out what the moves were coming down the line inside the PSNI. And we saw what happened. The arrest took place. So I am told that the Ulster Unionists were well ahead of the game here and left the DUP dead when it came to knowledge and foreknowledge of what the police were going to do. And it has, there's not a doubt in the world, what Mike Nesbitt did has left the DUP in a spin. And don't delude yourself, it has left the DUP in a spin. And it's the reason why they're very reluctant to go out into the constituencies and to say, right, OK, give us a vote.
Yes, it should be emphasised, of course, that the three men have been released, and indeed one of them is threatening, at least one of them is threatening to sue for wrongful arrest. I know we're not going to talk about that in any detail
but there is
it's important to raise that on the back of much hanging on the arrests.
But just let me draw attention to something. This is quite interesting because I think it's important that people understand how these things work. The solicitors acting for Bobby Stewart this morning, I heard him there on the radio. He said he sat for 35 hours with his client and no evidence was put before him. Now that's his allegation, but it's remarkable when you think of it, the society in which we live, that the solicitor sat there, and I say it's a wonderful system that we've moved to such a stage where you have access to your solicitor. He said he sat with him for 35 hours. Now all of what has happened in recent weeks, it raises another question. I'm asking this question on Twitter this morning. I wonder what the Chief Constable George Hamilton feels about it all now. I wonder how he's thinking this morning against the backdrop of his outreaching to the nationalist community in recent times, going to the Fáilán Phobail in West Belfast, going to the Creggan or Bogside in Derry, given his analysis, his assessment, etc., and where we sit this morning with the political system in turmoil. Big questions. It's a searching time. It's a challenging time for so many people in public life right now.
The cynic will say it's also a countdown to election, and you can't have harmony on the run-up to an election in this part of the world. We never have harmony going into an election, no matter how well they all get on the rest of the time.
I think that's true. I think that we're in election mode. It's very interesting to listen to Arlene Foster. I heard her the other morning. Boy, she decapitated Mike Nesbitt, you know. And I knew this from talking to the DUP. They are so sore over the way that Mike Nesbitt has behaved. She made the charge. He was very willing to engage us when it was a matter of a pact to try and secure seats for the Ulster Unionists in the Westminster election. And yet, he gave them no forewarning. He absolutely wrong-footed them. And there's an overt admission that Mike Nesbitt outwitted them and wrong-footed them politically when he decided to pull Danny Kennedy out of the executive. And boy, she is the Terminator. She is going for Mike Nesbitt at this point in time.
But in fairness, supporters of Nesbitt would say he had an advantage from the electoral pact, and now he has no electoral pact and he's got an advantage over the DUP.
Well, I mean to say, I'm sure that it's a payback time for 17 years ago when the Democratic Unionist Party crucified David Trimble week in, week out. So I mean to say, I suppose it's fair to say that all's fair in love and war and in politics. But it is quite interesting. But Arlene Foster, I doubt if there's a male politician as robust as this lady. You know, she is the Terminator. And just listening to her last night about talking about possible, and I'm very careful about my use of language here, possible rogue ministers. Possible rogue ministers. Now, that's a throwback to Martin McGuinness's decision just before leaving office to kill off the 11 plus. And the other, obviously, what's at play here is that they're very worried that should a Sinn Féin minister be in a position to act unilaterally, and potentially any minister will, is still in a position to act unilaterally. But when it comes to the old money, she is staying as finance minister. But clearly, the DUP are saying, oh, by God, you're not going to direct a shedload of money towards the Irish language or a GAA park in County Tyrone or someplace like that. So this is why she said that she's going to be the gatekeeper. She's going to make sure. Now, she said that she's there in the interest of the people of Northern Ireland. But when you use terms about rogue ministers, possible rogue ministers, I correct myself.
And possible renegade ministers.
Yes. Well, when you use that sort of language, and who's left? Well, David Ford would be one hell of a renegade, wouldn't he, you know? And after that, you're talking about Sinn Féin and SDLP.
Yeah, but did she not sort of suggest the possible renegades were in Sinn Féin, and the rogues were in Sinn Féin, and the renegades were in the SDLP?
Yeah, I mean, but I'm only saying, you get the picture. Now, she's quite careful with her use of language. Possible rogue ministers. But this was a reference to Martin McGuinness on the 11 plus decision before leaving office. He jumped the Democratic Unionist Party on that. So she's a tough cookie. And the Secretary of State said, had Peter Robinson resigned, then it would have been elections. No doubt about it. So the hokey-cokey starts now. Are we going to witness a DUP minister being renominated on a weekly basis to the various departments and staying in office for 5 minutes, stepping down, coming back for the following week for 5 minutes, stepping down? We're into uncharted waters here, really, Frank. It's just going to be a fast-flowing tide in the coming weeks, without any guarantees.
How long will the electorate, and I mean the ordinary Joe and Josephine, who, unlike ourselves, keeps an eye on this, the people who are going about their daily routines, how long will they put up with what many people are calling just a circus?
Well, they have no choice until there's an election. And will they vote along tribal traditional lines? That's the challenge. We can talk about this until the cows come home.
But is it not a suggestion that less and less people will vote? The only ones who will vote are the ones who are going to retain the status quo, whereas people who might come out and vote if there was something to vote for are going to be so disillusioned that they just walk away.
I am told that that is the big, big worry in the Democratic Unionist Party. That's why they're not prepared to head for the water jump quite yet. That's why Peter Robinson created this so-called space, introduced this ruse by, I suspect he had his guys, his aides, combing every standing order to establish whether he could step aside and put Arlene in. But there's a timeline on that. 6 weeks is the limit. After that, there's a big decision to be taken. But I suspect he's doing everything in his power to stop having to go to the country. And the other thing is this, Frank. I am not really convinced, looking at Peter Robinson, listening to Peter Robinson. I have observed something about Peter Robinson this week. He read his statement each time. This is uncharacteristic of Peter Robinson. Peter Robinson fires, shoots from the hip. He's there standing with a statement as if there was somebody at his back saying, read this, this is what you read. And there's another thing I've noticed about Peter Robinson. Something, and this is recognised inside the Democratic Unionist Party, something has happened inside his voice, inside his throat. There's something going on. Dr. Tobey yesterday, he is of the opinion that whatever is happening or has happened inside Peter Robinson's body, there's some physiological change which is changing the tone and the timbre of his voice.
Yeah, he does sound a bit hoarse, but that
but it's very it's not just for a few days.
But if he sounds a bit hoarse when he's delivering a statement, that doesn't mean that people are going to turn against him as a politician.
I'm not suggesting that, but I'm raising the issue: has Peter Robinson the stomach to go out there and start fighting an election with all this baggage that's hanging around there and all the contempt and aggro about the assembly and the executive and where we're at today. That's the only question I'm asking. Is he in the mood for fighting an election? I question that.
Eamon, stay with me. I want to speak to Jim Allister, the leader of the TUV. Mr. Allister, good morning.
Good morning.
On a morning like this morning, Jim Allister, you almost get the impression that you would be smiling when you wake up.
I'm not smiling for Northern Ireland because we're still the most farcical arrangements of government that I think one could even in any nightmare think of. Because, you know, this has got beyond farce. The DUP very solemnly said on Wednesday their ministers would be resigning. Then they did a U-turn yesterday. And the reason they did the U-turn was that if Peter Robinson had resigned, then that by law also resigned McGuinness. And in consequence, there would be an election. They'd be scared of an election. So running away from the election, they come up with this stunt of Mr. Robinson standing down and putting in Armin as a stand-in for minister. But what they're also doing, of course, is sustaining Martin McGuinness, the very man they told us a few days ago should be kept out of government. They're now sustaining him in government when they had the ball at their toe and decided not to strike the ball.
Well, Ms. Foster obviously says that she's the gatekeeper at the moment. She's protecting the unionist people from possible rogues and renegades.
That's only for birds to believe that. That is nonsense. The DUP had the opportunity to be good to their word, to bring this miserable executive to a close, to force McGuinness' resignation, because Robinson, once he resigns, both are resigned. And they chose not to. They chose to keep McGuinness in office. The reason they did that was the consequence of putting McGuinness out was an election, and they are running scared of an election. And all this talk about gamekeeper is absolute cuckoo. There is nothing to that whatsoever, because if Robinson had been true to his word and resigned, then there'd be no ministers at all, because the executive would have collapsed.
Mr. Allister, Eamon Malley's here with me in the studio. He's really keen to ask you a question or two.
May I invite my learned friend to return to Arlene's statement? Did the DUP say that all ministers would resign? I'm not sure the word all was there. Did you see the word all?
Well, of course they can be disingenuous. They said that their minister, that DUP ministers would resign.
But did they say all? Did they say all ministers would resign?
Just a moment, Eamon. If they had lurking in their mind that they mean all ministers, then the obligation was on them to make that clear. To simply say DUP ministers will resign and Peter Robinson is the DUP minister, Irene Foster is the DUP minister, and to know that they didn't intend to resign either of them, then they were being wholly disingenuous. So the onus was on them to make it plain what they wanted rather than play games such as they've been doing in order to avoid an election.
What do you see happening next, Mr. Allister? Talks on Monday. The main parties are going to be in there. Do you see an election on the horizon?
Well, I think that sooner or later you cannot avoid the reality that this executive, such as remains of it, will implode because it's built on sand. Once it implodes, there should and must be an election. I just wish it had been sooner and had been put out of its misery yesterday, because my goodness, what is it doing for anyone? It is the most atrocious, miserable, failing system of government we've ever had. And it is the system of failing, because it is the consequence of mandatory coalition that we're in this pickle today.
However, if that election does come along, and Mike Nesbitt, as the leader of the Ulster Unionist, seems to have a strong hand at the moment, is that not hugely to the disadvantage of the TUV?
No, the TUV has long been the authentic voice of opposition. Others may now see the wisdom of what TUV was saying, the wisdom of being outside the executive, the wisdom of having an opposition. Welcome to opposition, Mike. But the people know that where the authentic voice in these matters is. And look, it's as simple as this. If people want more of the shambles and more of the same, then vote again for the same parties. If they want a different vision, they want a vision of devolution that will work and last based upon the concepts of the people being able to change their government and to have an opposition and vote a party out of government and have devolution based on that which will work, voluntary coalition and an opposition, then they'll vote for the authentic brand that has long advocated that.
Okay, Jim Allister, thanks for your time this morning. There's going to be a lot of bickering, isn't there?
Yeah, the big, you can call all the elections you like and you can hold all the elections you like. But the big question is, to what are these people being elected? If Jim Allister or Peter Robinson or anybody thinks that the British and Irish governments are going to undo the architecture of the Good Friday Agreement, of the current electoral, of the collegiate system of government here, where you have a power sharing, where you have a mandatory power sharing a system per se, you know. I doubt if the SDLP or Sinn Féin, in any circumstances, would subscribe to a change of, or to an alternative form of government. Everything in Northern Ireland, known to you and me, Frank, has to be policed and policed again. So the idea of undoing the current architecture in terms of administration, of setting aside the Daunt system and all like that, I just don't think that's a runner. So if you had an election, to what would be unionism seeking to get elected? Because the architecture is not going to be there for them, in my opinion.
Eamon Malley with us in the studio this morning on what's shaping up to be a very important run-up to Monday and some very busy times in local politics and assembly politics here in Northern Ireland. Political commentator Eamon Malley in the studio with us. Eamon, over the weekend a lot of lobbying will be done. The focus will be on what happens on Monday. So how does it all work over the next 24, 48, 70 odd hours?
Well, the NIO will be in overdrive, as will the Irish government, trying to get all the ducks in a row. As I said, listening to Mike Nesbitt last night, he just totally and absolutely confounded us all. We still don't know what he's going to do. Is he going to go in? The Secretary of State is signalling this morning that the whole issue of alleged paramilitarism will be high up the agenda. But I noticed there was no solid commitment saying absolutely, it'll be number one on the agenda. Now, that's what Mike Nesbitt's demanding. If he's demanding that and it doesn't come to pass, then I don't know how he can join the talks on Monday. Secondly, where will the Irish government stand? This is a three-stranded approach. How close will Charlie Flanagan be in the course of these talks? I'm quite sure that the Irish government will want a presence. They'll want to be able to monitor and watch out. Will the unionists tolerate Charlie Flanagan within a beagle's gowl of what's going on? So we're a bit in limbo here. It's going to be interesting, but the civil servants will be bending the ears of the party leaders over the weekend, and there will be, I'd say, extraordinary meetings taking place of the hierarchies of the party to try and work out a path forward. But we're really into uncharted waters here. But it's quite evident, and regardless of what we think here, that David Cameron, whilst he sees this as serious, he doesn't see this as meriting the pulling down of the system. He doesn't see what has come to pass. And there are two sad families down there. I was talking to Mrs. McGuigan the other day, a very, very fine woman, a mother of nine, and she's a grieving mother, a grieving wife and mother, and Jock Davison's family likewise. I mean, say they're nearly forgotten now. They're nearly forgotten amidst all this, Frank, you know, because it's the collateral damage of this political system now, which is almost overlooked. And, you know, when I watched those boat people, those refugees every night, I just said to myself, is there something wrong with us? Why aren't there emergency meetings every hour of the day at Parliament Buildings about those boat people? And here we are squabbling over this nonsense. Do you know the big factor here? There could be as many as 800 jobs in the balance if this ship at Stormont goes down. 400 in constituency offices and 400 in Parliament Buildings. We don't realise this. These guys are no longer civil servants in Parliament Buildings. They're employed by the Commission of the Assembly. So if the ship goes down, if the Assembly ship goes down, there's no reallocation of those jobs. It's not like the old civil service. They could go back into civil service. So there's so much at stake here.
So much at stake indeed, and one man who doesn't have the portfolio that he previously had is on the line, the former Health Minister, Simon Hamilton. Mr. Hamilton, good morning.
Good morning.
This is some debacle, to say the least.
Well, we're clearly not in a good place, and let's not forget why we are in the difficult circumstances that we're in. A man has been murdered. The chief constable has come forward and said that they are investigating as a leading part of the inquiry the connection to the fact that the Provisional IRA were involved in that. And obviously we well know the well-established links between the Provisional IRA and Sinn Féin, and obviously the investigation into the murder was taken to the very highest levels of Sinn Féin. We said right from the start, not just in recent days, we said right from the start, we believed that we needed some time and some space to sort out these very serious issues. We sought an adjournment of the Assembly. Several occasions we sought an adjournment of the Assembly because we believed that it couldn't be business as usual, and we needed that time and space. That was rejected by other parties, inexplicably by other parties who wanted business as usual. This seems to carry on whilst these very serious issues were materialising around us. We also requested a suspension from the government, and in the absence of both an adjournment or either an adjournment or suspension, we made it perfectly clear that our ministers would have to resign, and we've lived up to our word in that respect.
Well, to a point you have, because Arlene Foster is still in there.
She is, and the party leader, Peter Robinson, made it very clear why Arlene is remaining in post. She's there she's been described as a gatekeeper in the last day, and that's very simply because if all of our ministers, including Peter, had have resigned from post, you would have started a 7-day clock, which would have been counting down from yesterday, and in that period of time before there would have been collapse of the executive, and in that time there was a potential for other ministers, Sinn Féin ministers, SDLP ministers, to do whatever they wanted as they remained in post. And we have experience from the past where in the last days of the executive in around sort of 2002, Martin McGuinness took a decision to scrap the 11 plus, and we've been living with the consequences of that ever since. So we couldn't have a situation where we had Sinn Féin or other ministers in post who were just doing whatever they wanted, and we need Arlene there as that gatekeeper, as a barrier, as a check and a balance to ensure that things that are to the detriment of the people of Northern Ireland aren't done.
Yeah, but when you talk about a gatekeeper, and she makes reference to possible rogue ministers in Sinn Féin and possible renegade ministers in the SDLP, it sounds more like we have a First Minister who's a gatekeeper for unionism as opposed to for the people of Northern Ireland.
Well, we'll unashamedly be trying to protect unionist interests. We are a unionist party. We're a unionist.
But is the First Minister not for everyone, not to represent everyone in the country?
Well, yes, absolutely. And Arlene has done that in the post that she has been in ministerial office, so, and I have as well. And,
but she's not prepared to do it now.
Well, she's there. But let's put it there. We are unionists. We are elected as unionists. We seek to protect and advance unionist interests when we are in office. And we have done that in the past, and we will continue to seek to do that. But we are also there to serve all of the people of Northern Ireland. And that is something that obviously we've taken very, very valuably, or put a great value in over the last number of years while we've been in ministerial office. But we are in a very difficult position at this moment in time, and let's not forget, as I said before, why we are where we are. It's not because of anything that the DUP has done. We have reacted and responded to events, but the catalyst for all of this was the murder of a man on the streets of Belfast, and the chief constable saying that that murder was carried out by members of the Provisional IRA who are connected to Sinn Féin.
Yes, but you only reacted after Mike Nesbitt reacted. You were slow to react.
We made it clear that what we wanted was to take some time and some space to let things develop, and they did develop.
They developed by Mike Nesbitt taking his executive minister out.
Not at all. No. Well, that didn't cause anything to happen. We said from weeks ago, immediately after the murder of Kevin McGuigan, that it wasn't a time to jump first, jumping last, and jumping out of the executive was the last thing that was a last resort and was the last thing that we should be doing, and that's what we did. And we didn't, we didn't want to do it, but we felt it was necessary. We set it out that it couldn't be business as usual, that we needed that time and space to resolve these issues, because that remains our primary focus and that remains our main goal. We want to resolve these issues. I appreciate that it looks very difficult and very challenging to resolve those issues as we sit here right now, but I do believe that with effort we can still resolve the matters that are at hand, and we need to put that effort in, but we need some time and we need some space to be able to do that. We couldn't do that with the executive and the assembly trundling on as if nothing had happened.
Will you be in at those talks on Monday?
Well, look, we're going to discuss our options in respect of talks as a party today and in the days ahead. We will obviously be in close contact and probably regular contact with the government to see exactly what their response is going to be, and we will take a decision accordingly. But, you know, let's be under no illusion, make no mistake, we want to resolve the issues that are there. That's our goal here, is to keep devolution in place, to have a government, locally elected, locally accountable government at place in Stormont, because we believe that's in the best interest of the people, of all of the people of Northern Ireland. But we cannot have a government doing that job if it is infected by having a party associated with an armed and active terrorist organisation. That just simply can't happen. That's not tolerable. And that's why we've had to take the actions that we have to try to create that time and space that we need to resolve those very serious issues that are before us.
Yeah, you see, if you're hesitating about going into the talks on Monday, it almost sounds like as if you're waiting to see what Nesbitt's going to do, because he wants the IRA at the top of the agenda. He'll go to the talks if that is the way the template of the day is outlined. Whereas you're hesitating, and you're using almost the same arguments that the Ulster Unionists have been using before you.
Well, it would be very difficult to follow the lead of Mike Nesbitt, because I'm not entirely sure where Mike Nesbitt is going. I've heard him in the last 24 hours adopt completely contradictory positions. I've heard him say that he was in favour of a suspension of the Assembly, and then I've heard him say that he wasn't in favour of a suspension, that he was in favour of an adjournment. I understand that two MPs, when they were meeting the Prime Minister the other day, said that they were against an adjournment, yet then Mike Nesbitt came on the radio not long afterwards and said he was in favour of an adjournment. So, you know, it's hard to take that as sort of serious political leadership, and it's not something that we will be following. What we are doing is making our agenda clear, making our proposals clear. We've made it clear from the start that it couldn't be business as usual, that we needed time and space to deal with the issues that are before us, because we could not get an adjournment, because other parties, including Mike Nesbitt's party, inexplicably voted for the Assembly to continue on as if nothing had happened. We had to take it into our own hands and step down.
One of the things he did say was that the payments shouldn't go to the politicians in the meantime. Do you think you should be paid at the moment for what you're doing?
Well, you know, this is a sort of a bit of an issue that's thrown up to try to distract away from the very serious issue.
It's very relevant to the electorate.
I can understand that there are many who want to know. I still have a job to do. I'm still the Assembly member for the Strangford constituency, and I have duties and responsibilities as member of member of the Assembly representing Strangford constituency, and be paid accordingly for that. But obviously, those ministers who have stepped down will not be being paid, and Arlene has made it clear that she will not be taking any remuneration for doing acting First Minister either.
When will we know, Simon Hamilton, when will we know if the DUP are going to go into those talks on Monday?
Look, we need to reflect today on our options, and we need to discuss what the government's intentions are, and we will take some time today to do both and decide then accordingly.
Simon Hamilton, thanks for your time this morning. Thank you.
Frank, thank you very much.
That's the man who was the Health Minister, Simon Hamilton. DUP, they seem hesitant at the moment, don't they?
Well, I think they're all sort of trying to grope their way forward. I didn't intervene when Simon was speaking, but I noted what he said last night in an interview. He said, "I enjoyed being Health Minister." There was a sense of the past tense. I just wondered what's going on in the heads. Have they concluded that it's highly unlikely they'll be back? He said, "I enjoyed being." He didn't say, "I'm looking forward. I have a lot of work to do." He said, "I enjoyed being Health Minister." So he's a very sane fellow. He's one of the more sane people in terms of... He doesn't emote much. He speaks with clarity, a bit like Nicola Sturgeon in disposition, I find.
I would hate to think you're suggesting there's insanity in politics. I'll not push you on that.
No, but you know he's not given to extravagant language and provocative language. He's very measured. He's more of a Westminster-style English politician rather than a local politician given to very colourful language. It's a bit of quality about the man. That's my. I don't like the beard though, but that'll go.
But you know, in a funny sort of way, it comes down to things like that with regards to the electorate, and that's what I was saying about the payments. And he was sort of ignoring that as an issue. There's a frustration. We get it all the time from the texts and the emails here. There's an incredible frustration among the electorate.
Oh, this, people, it's not
people,
just here.
People are fed up to the teeth with those who are at Stormont at the moment.
Yeah, but it's not uniquely Northern Irish. It's not uniquely Northern Ireland. The same obtains in Britain, the same sense of disappointment, disillusionment with politics. David Cameron has the same problem. Same problem down south. I think that's just the way it is. People are fed up. They just feel they're shortchanged. That assembly is costing something like 15 million annually, and people are asking, well, what are we getting for that? What are we getting out of it? You know, that's the big question. And at the same time, if that falls, as I said, potentially 800 people, that's a big factory, could be without jobs. So there's a lot at stake here, and the politicians, they have to think very carefully about this. Are they going to throw 800 people onto the scrap heap?
There's a lot of discussing, a lot of debating, and a lot of reporting to be done. And needless to say, we'll be keeping you right across it. Eamon, thanks for dropping by.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.